And welcome back to the show, 203-333-9422. Well, it's a Friday, and we've been talking a lot about some serious subjects today, have we not? We haven't even gotten into Iran and what's happening with all of that, but you know you can get that from other places. And you know the truth is, we need to turn to something else once in a while. We need to keep learning our history. We need to laugh a little bit. I don't know what you're doing this weekend. I'm so excited because I have no plans. I'm so excited to have no plans. I can't even begin to tell you. Next week's our anniversary, and so Bill and I are going up to Newport, Rhode Island. I'll tell you all about that when we get back. And then we launch into getting ready for the New Hampshire primary and just a lot of other things. And before you turn around, it's spring. But this particular weekend in January, it's supposed to be between 50 and 60 degrees outside. And even though it's going to be a little bit drizzly, I'm going to get outside with my dog. I'm going to put on a pair of good mud boots. And I'm going to have a great time taking a long walk in unseasonably warm weather. It's the micro and the macro, right? I'm enjoying the micro, which is the beautiful day in January. And the macro are messages in my head saying, it's unseasonably warm for January. Aren't we supposed to have snow right now? Isn't this what climate change is about? Are we having a little global warming? You know what I'm saying. Joining us right now is Jim Motovalli. And Jim, I understand you're a radio host yourself on The Peak. Is that right? Let me make sure I have the right mic. Okay. You've been on there for how long, Jim?
Oh, over 30 years.
Wow, that's wonderful. When's your show on? Let's give you a shout
out. It's on Tuesday nights, 2nd, 4th, and 5th Tuesdays, WPKN, 8 to 11 p.m.
Wonderful. So I bet you love radio, huh?
I love radio.
Me too.
I totally love radio.
Me too, me too. So your book, it's a beautifully produced book. It's called The Real Dirt on America's Frontier Legends. Jim, well, first of all, let's talk about the fact you're going to be talking about this book and presenting in person on Tuesday, February 4th in the Madison, R.J. Julia. But you're telling me R.J. Julia has a second outpost now in Middletown?
Yes, they have a new store in Middletown also, and I believe I'm doing a thing there. I don't have the date in front of me.
All right, but Tuesday, February 4th for sure in Madison. What made you so interested in America's Frontier Legends?
Well, what's interesting about them is that what we know or think we know about a lot of the famous figures like Davy Crockett or Daniel Boone, it's based on what was then the sort of very fanciful biographies of them, and that were distributed in these little penny editions. And often the biographers, sometimes they were presented as autobiographies, but sometimes as biographies. But the authors almost never even met the person they were writing about. And
sort of like today's, you know, Facebook feeds, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there was not a lot of verisimilitude in reporting back then. And whatever,
again, sort of like,
you know,
today.
If the legend was better than the truth, then they went with the legend. And a lot of that is still in the public consciousness as to what these people were like. And in reality, they were quite different.
So let's get into it. Of course, you just cited a great line from the fantastic movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Right.
Remember?
Yes.
Right? When the truth conflicts with the legend, print the legend. What a great movie with Jimmy Stewart, John Wayne, and Vera Miles. Oh, what a classic.
And Lee Marvin.
I think. Lee Marvin, the bad guy. Oh, of course, Lee Marvin. I think John Ford made that one. What a great movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. So, and Liberty Valance would have been a America frontier legend if he had been anything other than a fictional character. So, and tell us a little bit, Jim, before we get into it. There was a myth-making agenda here, right? I mean, in other words, America wanted to hear stories about these people that made them larger than life.
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
They?
There was what was called the dime novel, and they were very, very popular. Some of them sold 500,000 copies, and on the, you know, in frontier America, that's a lot of copies. So that's why, even in when they were still alive, Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone and people like that became very famous. And
Davy Crockett.
I also get into the later years, and in the 1950s, we went through a absolute mania for anything involving the West. There were TV shows on both Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett, and both of them were played by the same person.
That's why I always got them confused. Was it, what was his name?
Fess Parker.
Fess Parker. Oh,
yeah.
And Gunsmoke. I think Gunsmoke was the longest running television show
sure,
by the time
Gunsmoke,
it retired,
Rawhide,
right?
Rawhide, Bonanza.
Yep. Bonanza.
Have Gun Will Travel. There were a lot of those shows, and they were very popular. I mean, I had a cowboy hat. I had a coonskin cap. I had six guns. I had chaps. I had the whole
outfit. Of
course
you did. And who were your enemies? Weren't they the Indians?
Indians.
They were the Indians. Come on. Cowboys and Indians. That was definitely Americana for a long time.
And that's why in my book, The Real Dirt on America's Frontier Legends, I also portray some Native American characters who should have become famous but didn't. And also some both African American and Latin American frontiersmen.
Really?
Yeah. So like in one case, Jim Bridger, who is famous as a scout, had a partner who was Hispanic and isn't known at all. And that's just, you know, Luis Vasquez. And he was just as interesting as Jim Bridger. But, you know, there's a lot of racism operating in the frontier at that point. So and Jim Beckworth, who was an African-American frontier and even has some, there's a pass named after him that he discovered. We don't know him because he wasn't portrayed in those dime novels. And again, racism played a big part in that.
So let's get to it. So first of all, who was Daniel Boone versus Davy Crockett? Who were these two giant legends?
Well, they were very different. Davy Crockett was a big hunter. He was also a congressman. He died in the Alamo, which certainly cemented his legend. But I even get into the fact that he may not have died the way he's usually portrayed, swinging his rifle Old Betsy and killing Mexicans as he went down. In reality, he might have been killed. He might have been captured and then killed later.
Oh, really?
And Daniel Boone is actually an earlier figure in American history. He's famous for always sort of pushing west because he wanted more elbow room. And he really was like that. But the idea of him in a coonskin cap is kind of ludicrous. And he was also a legislator. He was a state legislator, a much more refined figure than the homespun idea. Actually, in the Fess Parker renditions, they're almost exactly the same.
Person, yes.
The same person,
exactly.
Basically.
So, but Daniel Boone was born to Quaker parents in Pennsylvania in 1734, long, long time ago. And we tend to think of Quakers as pacifist, peaceful people, and he might have been, but Daniel Boone was somebody who hunted a lot, and
he was actually,
that was the culture then too.
He did kill
too,
a
right?
lot of Indians, but
he killed a lot of Indians.
Yes, but,
how did that go with his Quaker upbringing?
Well, I mean, Indians I think killed two of his kids, so there was quite
a lot.
Oh, is that
right?
Since he was on the frontier, there was also the frontier with Indian lands, and there was quite a lot of conflict. I mean, I don't think he chose to make war on any Indian tribes. He just probably was defending himself. Most of that's recounted in the book.
So that was Daniel Boone. Now, so Daniel Boone is the 1700s, and then Davy Crockett is the 1800s, right?
Yeah, and he was a fairly homespun figure, but, you know, his autobiography, it's questionable whether he wrote it. It's In fact, almost certainly he didn't. And it portrays him as like killing like 900 bears in one year and that kind of thing. And I'm sure he killed some bears. I doubt he killed that many. And I think he was a fairly more sophisticated figure than he's generally portrayed. But that's often true of these folks. This is, by the way, a series, and I've written a second version of it that's about the frontier outlaws. That one's not out yet, but they were equally colorful. But, you know, there was a lot of America to explore, and people like Lewis and Clark, who are a chapter in the book, they were heading out into largely uncharted territory when they were sent out by Thomas Jefferson to see what the Louisiana Purchase was actually like. I mean, it was like a third of America, and they had no idea what was there. It's just like when we purchased Alaska later, people said it was an idiotic idea, and what were we getting? So Thomas Jefferson wanted to say, we actually bought something valuable, you know? It's like a passage to the east, and there's lots of valuable
Who was living there then?
Oh, it was all Indian tribes, but it had also been penetrated by French traders from Canada. French-Canadian traders. And the idea that they were meeting uncontacted Indian tribes is actually not correct, because many times they would counter villages and there was Western goods that they'd been trading with. The French Canadians don't get as much credit for exploring the West as they deserve.
Wow. But by the time Lewis and Clark were there, the French Canadians, any kind of stake to autonomy was gone because America owned it now.
Yeah.
Although the civil law in Louisiana survives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot of historical context to what these frontiersmen were doing. And early on, their main pursuit was furs. And they were guides to help people maximize their fur intake. But they were so successful at it that, particularly for beavers, which were highly in demand for beaver hats and stuff like that, they pretty much, it's amazing they didn't go extinct.
They pretty much did, though.
Yeah.
They pretty much did.
So that actually changed the nature of the frontier life, because trapping was no longer as lucrative as it had been.
Well, this is what people do. We're chatting with Jim Motovalli. The book is called The Real Dirt on America's Frontier Legends. It's a beautiful hardcover book. It's got a lot of color illustrations. It's a very beautifully designed book, and it's designed in a way to say what we thought we know, how they got it wrong. And chapter by chapter, the legend, how they got it wrong, what we actually know, what said.
I'll give you a good example. And a lot of these people are in popular fiction, like Hugh Glass. Everyone knows him from the Revenant movie.
Oh, I didn't see that movie because I was told it was too violent. I can't see violent things.
It's violent. It has some violent elements. It's basically a story from the very early days, like 1810s, 1805, where a trapper by the name of Hugh Glass gets mauled by a bear, and his companions leave him there to die, basically. And amazingly, he doesn't die, but goes on this incredible several hundred mile trek, badly wounded in the middle of winter, and makes it to a fort and survives. And his whole time he's thinking about getting revenge against the people who left him there. But he actually didn't kill either of the people that left him there. But
he was a true person.
He was a real person, and the early part of the movie is quite true to history. The second part is completely fanciful. He didn't have an Indian son. He wasn't helped along by Indian tribes. That's completely made up.
What happened?
It adds a... he got there on his own.
Which is extraordinary altogether, and he didn't kill anybody.
And he couldn't kill the guy who had basically... The lead guy who had left him there, because he'd gone into the army and he was sort of protected by that. And in reality, he was actually killed by Indians only like a year or two later, Hugh Glass was.
Oh, no.
Yeah, after all that
he survived only to get killed by Indians.
Yeah, he did get killed by Indians, but a few years later. I mean, longevity on the frontier was not usually part of the picture.
What about any women?
Annie
Oakley, obviously.
Annie Oakley is portrayed in my book. She was a very straight shooter in more ways than one.
Amazing.
She was an incredible markswoman.
Yeah, I've read about her. At 11 or something, she was known as a prodigy with guns.
Yeah, but what's funny about her is everyone thinks of her as this Western person, but she was actually from Ohio and hadn't been West at all. I mean, she went West with the Wild West show, Buffalo Bills.
Right.
Show, but she was really a good person. And she's sort of in contrast to another person I portray, which is Calamity Jane, her legend is entirely of her own making. And she claims to have been a great friend and even engaged to Wild Bill Hickok, but that was
not true.
Not true.
But she was played by Doris Day.
She was portrayed by a lot of femme fatales in Hollywood. There was probably 10 portrayals of her. A lot of it has to do with that incredible name.
It's
Calamity
a great name.
Jane.
It's a great name. Did she give it to herself?
She claimed that that she got it because it was a calamity if you didn't have her guiding you or something. Some idiotic thing. She was in fact a walking calamity. She was a mess. She was a terrible drunk and a prostitute in her early years. And never really straightened out at all. I mean, she never even was a guide. She was like a camp prostitute in some guiding operations, but...
So she was completely myth, completely.
She really had no claim to fame.
She invented her own myth, completely. And then Hollywood had a great time with it.
She wrote her own autobiography in the form of a pamphlet, which she sold to buy drinks.
Well, this is really interesting, Jim. I want to thank you for joining us. The Real Dirt on America's Frontier Legends. And you're going to be at RJ Julia on Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. And I love the book. I love the book. It's a great book. It's a beautiful book. Who was the publisher here?
It's a company called Gibbs Smith out of Utah.
It's wonderful.
And I was very happy with the way they produced it. I did all the photo research.
It's magnificent.
And photo licensing on it. And it is very amply illustrated. There's about 150 illustrations.
If you're interested in the Wild West, if you're interested in teaching about the real Wild West to somebody else in your life, what really happened, it's called The Real Dirt on America's Frontier Legends. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Great.
We'll
be
right back.